You're listening to This Woman Can, episode 39 with Davinia Tomlinson, flipping disappointment into a positive. Hi everybody and welcome to this week's edition of This Woman Can. I am in conversation with Davinia Tomlinson.
Welcome Davinia to This Woman Can, the women's leadership podcast and your source of information related to women's leadership, female entrepreneurship, personal success and career advancement. I'm your host, Janice Sutherland, executive coach, leadership development expert and the author of This Woman Can, the No Bullshit Guide for Women Who Lead. And now, this week's episode.
MBA from Task Business School in London. And why I thought this is a really relevant topic for us to listen to hear about this week was that Davinia talks about other ways for women to take control of their finances, to raise more finances outside of the traditional ways we normally do it, by owning a piece of land, purchasing a property, working, even having a side hustle or a second job. So she provides some really great insight into how we can move into the investment market and why it's a good reason to do so. Now, if you get some really good insight from this, which I'm sure you will, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe and share on your favorite podcast platform, wherever you hear this podcast. And leave me a note on any of my social media channels, Instagram and Facebook, under I Am Janice Sutherland. And I really look forward to hearing from you. Enjoy. So my guest this week is Davinia Tomlinson, and as it happens, she is from my old hometown, Birmingham in the UK. So our accents will be a little unusual in today's episode. So Davinia, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm really well, Janice. Thank you so much for having me.
Excellent, excellent. So can you tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got to where you are today, and also your connection to the Caribbean?
Yes, well, why don't we take it starting from the last question. So my connection to the Caribbean, my family on my mother's side are from St. Kitts. So it's a place that I'm very fond of. I have loved since I was 4 years old when I first visited. And on my dad's side, we are Jamaican. So okay. I straddled two islands there. And I think in terms of my journey, you know, I was very much a kind of, I've grown up in a very conservative family where, you know, particularly growing up in the UK, education was very much drummed into us at an early age. And we, you know, as a result, I basically did all the traditional routes in my career, going to sixth form, going to university. And I knew that I wanted to pursue entrepreneurship at a very early age. So, you know, I did a business degree, and much later in my career, I did an MBA, all with a view to setting up my own business eventually. So prior to establishing Raincheck, I worked in a variety of senior strategic marketing roles, but always within the finance and investment management world. So that's really where my passion lies. And I think, you know, purely from the perspective that finance for me is the one, you know, one area of business that has the power to really transform lives. Right. So although people wouldn't necessarily think of it with regard to the social good aspect of banking, because, you know, all you hear about, all you think about is Wall Street and greed is good and all of this kind of thing. But actually, for many people, having a good grasp of their finances from a personal perspective is one of the ways that they're able to make a real difference in their quality of life. And that's why I established Raincheck.
Okay. And tell us a bit more about Raincheck. You specifically work predominantly work with women.
Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, Raincheck is, I mean, effectively a new concept in financial services that aims to disrupt the financial services industry, the traditional financial services industry, by helping women in particular to take control of their financial futures. And the reason that's so important for me is because, you know, very early in my career, you know, I started at one of the world's largest global asset management companies. And even at that early stage of my career, at the age of 22, it was quite clear to me that despite us managing trillions of dollars of assets under management on behalf of customers worldwide, the vast majority of that was managed on behalf of men. So, of course, there's nothing wrong with that, you know, in and of itself. But actually, you know, as a woman, you know, it occurred to me that that seems to be hugely imbalanced. And, you know, over the course of my career, you know, investigating some of the reasons behind that, it's really come to my attention that lots of women feel that the financial services industry is not designed with us in mind. You know, there was a study that pointed to the fact that more than half of women in the UK felt that way, that it, you know, it wasn't designed to suit their needs. You've got all kinds of global phenomena, such as the gender pay gap, for example, mm-hmm. which points to the fact that women are paid less than men for an equivalent level of work. There's a motherhood pay gap, which means, you know, women, mothers in particular, are disproportionately affected, because for many of us, when we become moms, we choose to take time out of the workforce to raise our children. And as a result, that will have an impact on our lifetime earnings. So there are a whole host of issues that have basically contributed to me going, there really is a problem here with, in terms of women, you know, managing their finances or feeling empowered to manage their finances. And I really want to help this group in particular.
Right, right. Now, you're coming with a UK perspective there.
Yes.
With my Caribbean bias, because that's where I live. How do you see that differing for women in the UK compared to women in the Caribbean?
Yeah, I mean, I think historically, when you look at sources of wealth, so, you know, women in the West, we are used to a certain career trajectory. So when you get to a certain, if you get to a certain stage in your career, there are, almost tried and tested routes of progression and promotion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, irrespective of whether or not they're biased against us, you know, it's quite clear in terms, it's quite a linear path to progression. You pass certain professional qualifications, you work in a certain job for a number of years, and then you're guaranteed, you accrue certain benefits, for example, when it comes to retirement, your employee benefits and that kind of thing. And so for those of us that are willing to invest and play the long game, you know that at a certain point in your career, you will basically, to some extent, reap some of the rewards of your investment in your career over a period of time. Mm-hmm. What I've observed when it comes to the Caribbean is that women are much more used to this idea of a portfolio career, if that makes sense. So doing lots of different jobs or having multiple sources of income. And this is something that we can see, you know, it's funny, you know, it's almost like Caribbean women lead the way or have led the way.
Right.
Have led the way when it comes to considering alternative sources of income when it compares to the rest of the world. I mean, now it's a massive thing on social media.
Yeah.
People are constantly talking about, you know, make sure that you have a diversified portfolio of various income streams. But what I've seen, you know, with aunties, cousins, yeah. and other family members, even if they've got their main job, their day job,
yes,
they've also got other side hustles,
yes.
which I think is an amazing thing.
Yeah.
The one thing that I would say, though, is in terms of thinking strategically about personal finance and how to acquire assets outside of just land, which is something, you know, real estate, which is something that, you know, we've all grown up on. Even, you know, with my background, having lived in the UK, the conversation about land back home is something that many of us will be familiar with.
Owning a piece.
And I think that outside of that, I'm not sure that women are necessarily thinking broadly about, you know, how they might really maximize the money that they work so hard for and all these various side hustles.
Yeah, yeah.
So that they have something, you know, a nest egg for when they retire in later life.
It's very true when you talk about the multiple streams, because, and it doesn't matter what level you're at, even when I look at my own situation now, much as I'm moved from corporate to entrepreneurship, I have different streams of what I'm going to be doing and what I do. It's natural for us to have more than one job, no matter what level you're at. I've speak to GMs who tell me they have a couple of businesses on the side. Yeah. And I'm like, well, how do you manage to do that and manage to do your day job? But they do, but it is natural to do that. And then I think the other challenge for women here in the Caribbean is that, dare I say, is a much higher propensity for single parents here. So the need to have multiple streams of income is probably far greater, because we want for our children to go to a better school. We have to pay for private school. You know, the state school is well and good, but if we really want to get ahead, we have to get in state school. We want to go overseas to university. So it's really important that we look at how we can actually, I suppose, maximize what we earn to the best of our abilities.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that point about relationship structure is a really interesting one, because what we're seeing, particularly in the West, is, you know, women are choosing to get married later or not at all. Women are choosing to have children later or not at all.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, when you contrast that with the Caribbean, exactly as you say, you know, that many of the households are headed by matriarchs.
Yes.
We're all accustomed to this, you know, these real powerhouses of, you know, these matriarchal households, but it does place a greater burden of responsibility on women financially. And yeah. so that, you know, they have to find ways of hustling to make their money stretch as much as it possibly can.
Very much, very much, very much. So thank you for that. So Davinia, describe for me one of your biggest challenges and how you overcame that and what the lessons you learned.
Just at any point in my career or with regard to Rain Check?
Or life?
Any point in my career, yeah. you know, I think very recently, I would say one of my biggest challenges has been one of mindset. And the reason I would say that is because I have known, exactly as I described at the start of this interview, I have known that I wanted to run my own business at a very early age. I would say that, you know, in my teens, when I started to understand about the mechanics of business and to really learn about, you know, how businesses operate and the finance world, I knew that I wanted to work for myself. It was always a massive ambition of mine. Right. And I kept on putting, you know, I'm quite a planner. So I always had my 3-year plan and my 5-year plan, and I knew what I wanted to do. And I knew, you know, I'm going to do my MBA and I'm going to be exposed to all of these networks, and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to acquire the skills and the knowledge to set up my own business. And very recently, you know, having established Rain Check just 2 years ago, I feel like, you know, why didn't I do this sooner? And the reason I didn't do it sooner is because I had inhibited myself mentally from feeling like that was something that was open to me. So I had decided, you know, people from Birmingham, girls from Birmingham don't run their own businesses. Yeah. Yeah. And they don't, you know, when I entered the city of London as a 22-year-old, and I was very much an outlier as this young black female, and I had a high level of confidence, which I think comes from my Jamaican father. So I went in there and I didn't at all feel in any way that I should shrink my personality or try to fit in. You know, I very much used my Caribbean background and my heritage, my upbringing yeah. as an advantage, because in every room that I would walk into, I was the lone black face. I was quite often the lone female face. And I decided, you know, I could make this like a millstone around my neck, or I could flip this to be an advantage. And I chose the latter. But certainly when it came to stepping away from that corporate world in which I had thrived and, you know, to some degree had a level of success, yeah. to suddenly going, okay, now I'm going to build something from scratch. You know, this is something that has never been done before in my family. I don't have role models within my family. I have role models for everything else that I want, but there is nobody. Maybe this isn't for me. And I found myself talking myself out of that.
Right.
And deciding that, you know, I shouldn't or couldn't do this. Right. And I would say, you know, what I had to do was invest quite a lot of time in not even mindset coaching. I mean, I do have a coach and that has been phenomenally helpful, but I had to spend a lot of time unpicking some of my learned behaviors around where I'd got the idea that it wasn't yes. for me.
Yeah.
Looking at role models of people with similar backgrounds, not necessarily from Birmingham, but from other backgrounds where it's like, well, if this person is not, you know, there is nothing about them that would mean that they could do something that I couldn't. So, yes. you know, seeking out inspiration. Yeah. But really just spending a lot of time with myself and working on my mindset and my thought processes so that I started to feel that I was able to run this business. You know, having such confidence in many other aspects of my life, it was very disconcerting to feel that the one thing that I really wanted to do and the ambition that I'd harbored for such a long time, I was suddenly blocking myself from doing right. it. Because if I'd have asked anybody in my peer group, they would have said, well, of course you can do that. So the problem really lay with me. Within my mind.
Yeah. So that is obviously your journey of reinvention. I know we've talked off air about your future plans. So, yes. and I'm very much at the moment very big into women reinventing themselves and having their, dare I say, second act in air quotes. So for a woman listening to this and looking, well, look, I want to do, I want to make a change. I want something different in my career, in my future. What would be the one key, I suppose, the one key piece of advice you'd share?
You know, the biggest thing that I've learned, so, you know, despite having all the, I don't know, the achievements in my career and, you know, going and getting professional qualifications, et cetera, the one thing that has been a game changer for me has been my tribe. And, you know, it sounds cliched now when you talk about power of tribe, it's so important. Make sure you are surrounded by people that uplift and support you. And if so, you know, and actually, if there are people on your journey that you find drain you, or after every interaction with them, you find yourself feeling worse than you started. So this is not to say, this is not to say that you need to be surrounded by people who only tell you good things, like sycophants, because that's weird. But so of course we all need constructive criticism, but the people that are giving you constructive criticism are ultimately pushing you in the direction that you have sought out for yourself. Right. So they are trying to help you get there in the most effective way.
Yeah.
And I found, you know, when I was making the transition from corporate life through to Raincheck and many of the other challenges I faced in the last several years, the same people that have supported me through those are the ones that remain with me on the journey today. Right. So it's really important that you have, whether it be through your professional network or your personal network, even if it means that you have to avoid certain family members, do it.
I was about to say, so how do you, because it's almost like toxic friendships or toxic
people,
you just know are going to suck the life out of you, you know, and add nothing of nothing of value. How difficult did you find, and you talk about family, you know, they say you can't choose your family, but you definitely choose your friends. So, so how do you go about kind of, or maybe having that, dare I say, avoidance tactic, just kind of sidelining those people?
You know, it's so funny because I think, and this is a kind of thing that I feel I'm constant, you know, you constantly have to do a purge, or you're just assessing, you know, are these relationships, all relationships, are they serving me in the way that I need to be served? Yeah. And sometimes we have to be selfish. I think as women, we pour so much into others. Many of us, I mean, this is a stereotype about women. Not all of us are like this.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, we pour so much of ourselves into our relationships, whether it be with our partners or children or whatever, and we leave ourselves with nothing. And then we find, oh my God, I'm completely depleted and nobody's poured into me.
Yeah.
And so it's really important that as you're going through transitions or as you're going through life, that you decide that you have to be selfish in order to get yourself to the next stage.
Yeah.
So if you're very serious about what you want to achieve, you've got to sometimes have the difficult conversation. Now, someone like me, I'm very straightforward. And I found that these ghosting tactics that are quite popular now, where you just suddenly fade and people don't know, oh, Dav, I haven't heard from Dav in a long time. And actually, it's because I blocked them or deleted them. I can't do that. So my relationships have always been so enriching, you know, mutually enriching and loving, whether it's my friendships or partnerships or whatever. And so in some situations, I've had to say, I'm finding this relationship challenging. And this could be friendships or whatever else. I mean, professionally, it's quite different. But if it's a friendship, then I'm very confident saying, I'm finding this relationship very challenging and I've got to concentrate on this at the moment. I've got to concentrate on my children. I've got to concentrate on my business. And I don't think that this relationship is serving either of us at the moment. So I think we need to pause. I think we just need to take a break. And I think sometimes there is power in even if you've got jitters having those conversations sometimes, because your natural instinct is to just go, I don't want to hurt someone's feelings.
Yes.
Or but before you get to that point, that's the nuclear option. Before you get to that point, you can say, is everything okay? Because you seem so negative or you seem so down, or when I tell you things, I find that you find all the reasons why I can't do it versus all the reasons why I can.
Yeah.
And actually right now I need to be around people that can tell me all the reasons why I can, because I have enough of my own self-doubt you know, to fulfill that category.
Yeah.
So I need you to be my champion and my cheerleader.
Yeah.
And I find, you know, if that is unsuccessful, then you have to save yourself, because you can't save everybody at the same time.
Yeah.
So I've had to do that a couple of times in recent years. And even if you look back fondly on those friendships, there hasn't been one of those conversations that I've had that I regretted, because ultimately then you find, if you've got a very small and close-knit tribe, the power in a group, particularly with women, the power in a small group of women that are all uplifting one another and trying to fuel one another and you know, cheer one another on, it's the most amazing thing ever. So knowing that you don't have those detractors that are hiding around the corner waiting to trip you up is brilliant. Yeah. It's so liberating.
Yeah. I'm just going to not pause so much there, but just challenge you the way I was challenged on the word, because I, in a previous interview, I talked about putting ourselves first and being selfish. And I was actually challenged on that. The interviewee challenged me. And it was when I thought it was a very valid point, because what she said was that, can we find another word for selfish? Because as children, we have been taught that to be selfish is a negative. So we struggle with, and I thought, you know, that's a really good, really good
point. That is a good point.
So we were talking about making ourselves priority. And I think I was looking something with Ivalia Van Zandt, and I hope I got her name right, where she talked about being self-full, which was quite interesting. Mm. So I kind of try and make a conscientious effort. I know what I mean, but I'm going to try and not use that word selfish because of the negative connotations it has. And I hadn't thought about it. I was quite proud to use it, but hadn't actually thought about why some of us, some women, would struggle with that terminology, because it's been ingrained in us from children that to be selfish is to be bad, is a negative. We need to be more sharing. We need to, you know, give ourselves more and not, you know, and not keep ourselves in. So it's a very interesting challenge. One that has obviously stuck with me because...
It's a really good one. I love it.
Obviously stuck with me. So I'm going to make a conscientious effort to use a different phrase, but with the same connotation.
Me too. Yes, me too. You've educated me today, Janice. No, it's true. I love it.
So Davinia, how do you touched on some being a very confident woman when you went into banking, into the finance industry in London. And I know that can be pretty intimidating because it was all very much shiny glass and tall buildings, big city syndrome. But how do you navigate confidence issues? And if you do, how do you overcome them?
Yeah, you know, that has been a real journey. And I think you're right. As much as I say, you know, I have, you know, my family have imbued in me quite a lot of confidence because they've always bigged me up, basically. You know, I come from a family where when you're told that you're amazing all the time, kind of grow into that. It becomes your self-fulfilling prophecy. So you always strive to be your best all the time. But certainly there have been points in my career where, particularly at the point of going for promotions and things like that, where I feel like, you know, I'm doing a great job here. I really should be promoted. And then again, like, it's like having a little devil on your shoulder saying, well, who do you think you are? You're just a girl from Birmingham. Why would you be a director of this company? Or, you know, moving from corporate life into being an entrepreneur. And again, it's that imposter syndrome of, you can't really do this. Or when I do public speaking and I'm like, nobody wants to hear what you're saying. The devil will say to me, nobody wants to hear what you're saying, Dav. What are you talking about? A lot of it, again, has been a mindset challenge. And sometimes it's forcing myself into situations. And this is something that I'm very good at. I force myself into the most excruciating circumstances and situations because I think, Dav, this is growth. And if you are not thrust into an excruciating circumstance, you're not going to grow. You are going to stay in the same place. So you have to feel some pain. So maybe it's a bit of a like masochistic strategy, but it has always worked for me. So, and again, that is a mindset thing. There's a level of confidence that I have that what's the worst that can happen.
Right.
But that has been a journey. In the past, I would have shied at the support and love and nurturing that I've had for my family has been a blessing and a curse in some ways. Because I think if you are so heralded as somebody that's talented and smart and all of these things, you're afraid to fail.
Right.
And that was big thing.
Very true.
So, you know, I know that I'm good at passing exams. I'm good at studying. I'm nerdy. I'm bookish and all of these sorts of things. But if you take me outside of that world of following the linear path and you say, okay, Dav, create something out of nothing. And I'll go, well, I don't know how to do that because I haven't been trained how to do that. So therefore I can't do it.
Okay.
And, you know, later in my career when I realized, unfortunately, Dav, in order for you to get to that next stage, if you were so adamant that you deserve that promotion, you are going to have to do the thing that's uncomfortable. And I would sign myself up for things before I have an opportunity to sort myself out of it. At work, when they would say, I remember starting a new job and I had to present, you know, we would have these quarterly business updates that were held in these massive theatres in London. There were 250 members of staff that you'd be presenting to at any one time. Yeah. And I joined, and within about 2 weeks, the chief HR officer said to me, you know, we need you to come and talk about what your ambitions are for marketing. And before I had it, and he was like, you know, I know you've only just joined, so you're welcome to sit this one out and do the next one. I was like, no, and I just signed myself up for it. And after I'd signed myself up for it, I went home and I was like, why did you say yes, Dav? Why did you say yes? But because I'd been thrust into that situation, it was like, well, Dav, sink or swim. Yeah. You're not going to sink, so you better put your best foot forward. And you know, you feel like you're carrying the weight of the entire race on your shoulders, of all women, all Caribbean people. And that pressure... I know that I thrive under pressure. Right. If I don't have the pressure, then I'm not going to do anything because I'll just be chilling. Yeah. And so I think there's an element of being really self-aware and knowing what are the factors that will make me dance. Yeah. And I need pressure to dance. So, you know, it's always seeking out those situations where I'm like, okay, this is uncomfortable, but I'm going to put myself there anyway in order to succeed.
The image that popped up in my head then was the cartoon, the Yosemite Sam, where they're shooting bullets at the cartoon spray at the feet for them to dance.
Brilliant. Yes. Oh my gosh, that popped up. Perfect.
So you talked about failure, but how has failure made a positive difference in your life?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think there have been, oh my gosh, I remember there was a time, so I am somebody that, because I'm such a homebody really, and as much as I, you know, I want to experience new things and, you know, I love to push myself in, you know, whether it be physically or mentally or whatever else. But the one thing that I think I'd always wanted to do secretly, but always lacked the confidence in, was going to work abroad. I always harbored this ambition in amongst everything else was, you know, I really want to go and work abroad. And I worked for, at the time, a massive global company where there were opportunities to do that. Mm-hmm. And there were two opportunities that I was looking at. And I narrowed it down to one, and I was going to go and work in the Middle East. And I, you know, I pinned all my hopes on this opportunity, and I'd done all the work, I'd done all the interviews, and right, you know, I'd got down to the final two, and I didn't get the opportunity. And I remember being so devastated because that was the first time in my corporate life, and I was about 26 or 27, and I remember thinking, this is the first time that I've never got what I wanted
right
in my career. Yeah. So I'm so used to, you know, because you know, again, one of my strengths, I would say, is communication and being able to present myself in a really positive way, which it always, you know, always used to go work really well in interview situations. So I always used to feel quite confident in interviews that, you know, if I've struck up a good rapport, then I've got a really good chance of getting this job.
Right.
And I felt so confident about getting it. And then to be told, you know, we really liked you and da 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 da. And I'm like, no, this can't be. This feedback can't be for me, because surely I have done everything that I needed to do to win this opportunity. Mm. And it really affected me. I remember thinking for a good 3 months afterwards, it really affected me, I would say, because it made me question how I was presenting myself. Not necessarily my worth, but certainly my credentials in terms of, you know, why didn't I get the job? But then I think the one good thing about it, of course, is that it helped prepare me for future disappointments.
Okay.
You know, future promotions that I went for that I didn't get, for example, or salary increases that I wanted that I didn't get. So it was, you know, a good lesson. And, you know, everybody has to have their first failure in their corporate life in order to progress. Otherwise, again, if you're not putting yourself out there every day, then that means you're not growing. So that was really important. But I think the other thing was, of course, about thinking, how do I flip this disappointment into something that's going to help me?
Yes.
And the flipping for me was going, okay, Dab, you have had a very gilded path in your career so far. You know, of course, you've done everything that you need to do academically to get this job, and you've built the right relationships, et cetera, et cetera. You're doing a good job. But that doesn't mean that you're doing everything right all of the time. So there must be gaps in your skill set.
Mm.
There might be gaps, both from a professional perspective in terms of what's your technical ability? Does that need enhancing? From a soft skill perspective, how are your communication skills? You think you're a strong communicator, but are you able to adapt your communication style in different settings?
Mm.
How are you on negotiating? Mm. How are you when it comes to managing people? If you want to progress in your career, the more senior you become, you're going to have to manage more people. Are you well equipped to do that? Do you understand the cultural context of cross-border business? You know, working in the Middle East is quite different from working in the UK.
Yeah.
So even if you'd have got that opportunity, Dab, would you have been able to make the best of it? And so I had to, you know, it's kind of humbling yourself and taking a step back and going, okay, maybe I wasn't ready. Or even if I was ready for that opportunity, maybe it wasn't the right one. So in this period, what can I do differently to work on myself?
Right.
And I think sometimes, you know, it's easy to be quite petulant and go, well, I didn't get that opportunity, but I was absolutely the best person for the job. Yeah. They've made a mistake and it's their loss.
Yeah.
Which doesn't serve us, because ultimately we still didn't get what we wanted.
Yeah.
So it's thinking, okay, how can I use this time to go, I want to work on myself and improve myself.
Yeah.
So let me do a life audit. Where am I? Where do I want to be? And how can I fill that gap? And that's what I did.
Excellent, excellent. So you come across as very goal orientated, but my question to you is, what do you think holds women back from going for their goals?
You know, I think, and I've thought about this quite a lot, obviously, particularly when it comes to rain check, and I speak to so many women, yeah. And it's one of the best parts of what I do. And so many say to me, you know, it's a function in many ways of conditioning. Yeah. We've been conditioned. And you know, that. So I would say it's two things, because I'm a big believer in taking personal responsibility as well, mm-hmm. because otherwise you will forever have a victim mentality of believing yes. that things are happening to you and they're out of your control.
Yeah, yeah.
Lots of things that happen to us are within our control. We may have been conditioned in some ways, and it may be harder for us to reverse that conditioning, but it's still within our gift to do so, yeah. and we have an obligation to do so. But for sure, I would say, particularly in the West, there is a lot of conditioning around not just women's place within society, because I think we've moved on quite a lot from thinking all women belong in the home, or all women are born to be mothers or born mm-hmm. to be wives. I think that debate has moved on quite a lot, not as much as you would believe, but it's certainly yeah. moved on quite a lot in the West.
Yeah.
But I do think there's something around women feeling like they have to shrink themselves to fit in, because, you know, in certain settings, we are told that to be an assertive woman is to be aggressive
yeah.
or it's to be disliked or it's to be unpleasant. Yeah. And yeah. for many of us, men and women, nobody wants to be disliked.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be viewed as unpleasant. And these are the kinds of things that can hold us back and make us think, you know, I do want to pursue that particular goal or ambition, but at the same time, it's important to me that I retain a level of popularity, or maybe popularity isn't the right word, because it's not necessarily about being popular with everyone, but it's just yeah. being liked by the people that we respect.
Yeah.
When actually, I think respect is really important in this context. We need to be focusing more on having respect
yes.
than being liked.
Yeah.
And that's an easy thing to say, and it's a hard thing to do, because ultimately people might respect you but still say, I really respect her work, but I think she's a really awful woman. Well, nobody wants to be thought of in that way. And yeah. so there's a lot that we have to do to unlearn a lot of the things that we've been told, even within our own homes. Yeah. You know, I see situations even within my own family where you've got lots of boys, lots of girls, and the boys, you know, the things that they are being taught subliminally are yeah. that they should be free to be boisterous, they should be free to be outspoken, yeah. and yeah. the girls are being taught to be ladies. There's yes. nothing wrong with being a lady. I say this yes. to my girls all yes. the time. I have two daughters, yes. and I say to them, you know, be a lady. And of course, you know, that in and of itself can be a loaded expression. What does that mean to be a lady? Does it mean yeah. inhibiting yourself? Does it mean not being
yeah.
free?
Yeah.
But, you know, when that conditioning starts at such an early age and you go through society without being able to shake it off, or being frowned upon if you should step outside those boundaries, yeah. that yeah. has a knock-on effect on everything that we do. So I would say that, you know, for the women that I speak to, it's really encouraging for me when they say, you know, one of the reasons I love Rain Check is because obviously you are leading something that's based on your personal experience, and you are ultimately trying to help us all to take control of our situation mm-hmm. so that we can achieve the goals that we want to achieve, mm-hmm. but recognizing that good financial habits are one of the foundations to achieving those things. Mm-hmm. One of the women that I spoke to, I remember just recently, said to me, it's really helped me, having, you know, come on board as a Rain Check customer, it's helped her to kind of think about how she holds herself back in other aspects of her life.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think even when it comes to finances, lots of us, even in the West, and that's what I mean when I say, we're not as far advanced in yeah. another part of the world in the West than we would like to believe. I speak to many women in the UK who say to me, well, actually, in the past, I've just let my husband or my boyfriend or my dad
yeah.
look after my finances or tell yeah. me what I should do about my money. So these yeah. are women that are high flyers, senior execs in their careers, and they have no idea about how to manage their money
yeah.
because they don't see it as something that they should be doing as women. And yeah. this is what I mean. I think conditioning plays a massive part.
Yeah.
And we all have a responsibility to, you know, to take that kind of, you know, basically take the bull by the horns and go, you know, I'm a well-functioning adult. I should know how to run my life.
Yeah. I think we could have a whole different whole different interview on the whole issue or challenge of unconscious biases, because yeah. I think they permeate in so many different ways. And my beam, my bonnet at the moment is how we view women over 40 and over 50. You know, I'm just about to publish a whole article about allowing me to age on my own terms, because society is telling me I am old. But I've also seen women buy into it. you know, and then they're aging themselves. There's a whole different conversation. We won't get into it here, but you're quite right about the unconscious biases that happen, you know, in our own relationships. I see it with my husband sometimes. I have to check it and say, hang on a minute. That's not my, who said that was my job? You know, that's not what, how it goes. And he does it unconsciously because it's just what, you know, his mom probably did it or what he saw happen or what's been told to happen. So we have to be almost uber vigilant, continually vigilant, just checking those biases. We see them at work, at home, and just in society, society in general. So Davinia, I'm going off my soapbox a little bit here, but what advice would you give to your teenage self? You have a couple of young girls who be teenagers, before you know it. But what advice would you give to your teenage self?
Oh my God, I love this question. I think that I would tell my teenage self to. There's something about fear. There's something about not being afraid to fail. Because as I say, like when you, I remember at points, and I was quite an angsty teenager. And I remember being like, you know, traditional teenage girl, being stuck in my room, writing things down in my journal, in like, you know, really full of emotion, always in my feelings. And, you know, having a very strong relationship with my gran, because I felt like only my gran understands me. When I read some of my diaries, I laugh. I mean, we have this relationship to this day. Anytime I have a problem, I run to my gran and I'm like, guess what's happened? You know, and she'll counsel me through. But I think there is something about not being like recognizing that my family would still love me if I made a mistake.
Right.
Because
I,
you know, even though deep down I knew, so, you know, obviously, as I said, you know, being put on this pedestal and always being kind of heralded as, you know, Dav's a star, Dav's brilliant, you know, which is that's absolutely what should be happening in families. You need for the young people to have that positive reinforcement.
Cheerleader.
Of course.
Yeah.
And so I never needed to seek validation outside of my family. And that's, I think, has served me well in my career, because I know, you know, where when I go home, what if I've ever had a bad day, if I go home and say, this has happened and I did terribly, they'll say, no, you didn't do terribly. You're amazing. Yeah. You know, it's them, not you.
Yeah.
But I do think the flip side of that in my case was that I used to overthink everything.
Right.
And I used to think, well, you know, I better not do that thing because I don't quite know how to do it. And if I get it wrong, then my family are going to look at me differently or they'll be disappointed in me.
Right.
And
right.
So what I would say to my daughters is try everything that's legal.
Yeah.
Obviously that's legal. do go and do the performance, even if you don't know how to do it. Go and learn to ski or surf or whatever, do the physical things that we are told that Black people don't do.
Yeah.
Swim in the sea without wearing a swimming hat. All of this stuff.
Forgot about that one.
There is so much that, you know, even if nobody tells you, we internalize it and take it on as our own problem and start to go, well, I can't do that because, you know, I really want my family to still see me as the golden girl. And and I want to say to my daughter, you know, what I would say to myself is, you know, your family think you're a golden girl just by you existing. You are their golden girl. It's not just because of your accomplishments. Your accomplishments are like the cherry on top for them, but you breathe and therefore you are their golden girl. So just don't worry about that. Just do everything. Because I realized even some of the relationships that I had at university, I'm like, well, you know, I used to have this weird thing about loyalty to the wrong guys when actually, you know, you're like, I should have dumped that guy 2 years earlier than I did, but I didn't because I thought, oh, you know, maybe I shouldn't because I don't want to hurt his feelings or I don't want to. No.
Yeah.
Just, you know, feel, just try everything, have experiences, but know that your first choice isn't necessarily the best choice. Try a few things.
Right. And I love what you talk about the family being, you know, the cheerleader and stuff. I it kind of puts it back to my mom because when I started running as a means to keep fit and stuff like that after I had my children, and I started being competitive. I raced. I cycle race now, but I competed. And every time I tell my mom I'm in a race, the first question asks me, "You did win?" And I'm like, "No, mom, I didn't win. I didn't win because, you know, I'm like, I do a marathon in 5.5 hours. The winner does it in 2 hours.
Oh my God.
You know, and I said, but, you know, my viewpoint was that I got the same medal as the winner. You know, so the same sense of accomplishment, the same reward,
exactly,
for finishing was the same thing, but it was my sense of achievement that, you know, my own personal targets I had set myself, that's what I was focused on. But yeah, but you always need, my mom was my biggest, it still is my biggest cheat.
Yeah.
Do no wrong. And even I feel like, oh gosh, mum, I did get it wrong. I did.
I know.
But like you say, it can have negative connotations, because I think about some, like you say, relationships I've stayed in because of the expectation is that I shouldn't have got this wrong. You know,
that's it.
You know, so yes, yeah, so I totally understand that. So Davin, you were coming down to our last few questions. What are the three things you've learned about yourself during your career?
I would say that I am resourceful, far more resourceful than I ever would have imagined. And the reason that I say that is because I was somebody, when you grow up in abundance, and I don't mean an abundance of things, I grew up in a very classic Caribbean working class family. When you grow up in an abundance of, you know, as we've discussed, the positive reinforcement, the cheerleading, the nurturing and all of that, doing without it, suddenly you're like, hang on, how come nobody's telling me that I'm amazing every single day at work? Like, you know, how can I survive in this environment? So there is something about learning to just self-motivate, which I consider to be, it's resourceful in a different kind of way. So it's obviously there's resourceful in terms of having limited things and trying to make the best of that situation, which I've had to learn as well, working in startup culture. But certainly I would also say in like being able to self-motivate and to keep myself going is something that I wouldn't have known that I would have been able to do until I started my career.
Okay.
I think there is something about resilience as well.
Right.
So when things happen, you know, my career in the investment and, you know, the finance industry, particularly during the global credit crisis in 2008, when, you know, so many people had to be made redundant. We saw the fall of some, you know, very well-established and old financial institutions. And, you know, you have to have a level that really, you have to be able to hold your nerve through those times when everybody's job is on the line. You don't know whether you're going to come into work tomorrow and that your company, the bank that you work for, will still be standing. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something about having the resilience of mind to be able to withstand that and to go, well, you know, this is the industry that I have chosen. And so I have to be able to roll with the punches. Yeah. So there's something about that as well. And I think I always used to think of myself, it's funny, I always used to think of myself as, in my family, I'm an introvert.
Right.
And actually I realized out in the public, I'm a raging extrovert. And that's because my family must rate really highly on extroversion, because to them, I am, compared to my sister, I'm quiet. I'm the bookish, nerdy one. When I go outside, people are like, oh, Dav, you're such a people person. And I'm like, really? You need to meet my family, because I promise you, this is me being quite tame. So I would definitely say there's something about, you know, in terms of my personality traits, having an ability to build relationships with people quite quickly and establish rapport, that level of confidence comes from being in a family where we were all, as children, encouraged to have a point of view, to defend that point of view. We were not from the family where we were taught children should be seen and not heard, you know, speak when spoken to. We were always encouraged respectfully to participate in conversations and, you know, to contribute. And so that's something that I'm very happy to do. And so I meet people all the time. I was having this conversation with my friend actually earlier, where I was saying, I think one of the things that comes very naturally to me is to meet somebody and to find a point of something in common. Very easily. Because I think, you know, people are so interesting. And even if on the face of it, you wouldn't think you have anything in common at all, you have a conversation, you realize, actually, you do. Yeah. And I love that, you know, being able to do that. And I think that comes from, you know, having that personality where, you know, I'm attracted to other people's energy.
Excellent, excellent. And where would we find you on a Saturday morning at 10 a.m.?
Oh, my goodness. Well, thankfully, right now we're in an off season, but it would have been at my daughter's ballet lesson. We just had her recital at the weekend. But ballet lesson, Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock, I'd be doing that. But really, if I wasn't having to do that, I'd be doing something active myself, because I love working out. So I'd be running, I would be playing netball, something like that.
Excellent, excellent. And lastly, what's your definition of success?
My definition of success would be to have the ability to pursue all of the ambitions, all of the goals that I set for myself, creatively, professionally, and, you know, and in life,
right,
without having to worry about the burden of financial obligations.
Okay.
So, you know, just feeling liberated to just be without having to bow to other people's expectations. And that's the lesson that I would want to instill in my daughters, I would say.
So that was my last question, or penultimate question, Davinia. If people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that? They want to connect with you.
So I would say to just visit the website, raincheck.com. So that's rain, as in the weather, chq.com. And you can follow me at Raincheck on all social media platforms. And I always love chatting to people wherever they are in the world. So yeah, please get in contact.
Excellent. So Davinia, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome.
I always say that doing these interviews are no chore for me. It's one of the biggest pleasures I get is interviewing all the different women I get to meet and hearing their different perspectives and the nuggets information that they share with us. And Davinia was no exception. I love the thing she said about thinking strategically about investment. So in looking outside of the norms that we normally do, like land and, as I said, you know, second jobs and stuff, and the ways we can invest, and also not having that fear of investment. I also liked how she talked about the challenges she had with her mindset when she was looking to set up her own business. And I know that's something we all really suffer with. I know myself, I had challenges as I was stepping out of the corporate world into entrepreneurship. It stopped me a long time from doing things I want to do. And really there was no reason apart from what I was telling myself, which weren't founded, to be honest. They were founded in nothing. So really your mindset can be incredibly powerful at stopping you from going forward. And I also liked her point about finding role models. Someone that you can look up to, someone that can guide you, and the benefits of actually finding your tribe. Because sometimes it can be difficult to find like-minded women, people you really have a connection with that will help you through the journey. So some great takeaways there from Davinia. I hope you enjoyed it. Please again rate, review, subscribe, share the podcast on your favorite platforms. And until next week, remember, if I can, you can, this woman can. Take care.
You've been listening to the This Woman Can podcast, brought to you by This Woman Can, the no bullshit guide for women who lead, available on Amazon and Kindle. For more information about the training and consulting services offered for women who lead, including one-on-one executive coaching and group masterminds, visit thiswomancan.coach.